Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, January 8th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho Representative Bruce Skog of Nampa proposes bill increasing initiative threshold to 60% in order to pass. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service inviting public comments on Grizzly Bear Endangered Species Act listing for lower 48. And Washington Court of Appeals Commissioner issues stay in COVID disinformation case against Clarkston doctor. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. What some call the revenge on the voters continues in the Idaho legislature. Republican Representative Bruce Skog of Nampa introduced a bill today that would require approval of 60% of voters for a statewide ballot initiative to pass. Currently, initiatives need a simple majority or 50% to pass. Following the passage of a controversial initiative reversing Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's education privatization laws, Idaho lawmakers made it much more difficult to put an initiative on the statewide ballot, requiring the signatures of 6% of the registered voters in at least 18 of the state's 35 legislative districts. That's the system that's currently in place. After voters approved the Medicaid expansion with 61% of the vote in 2018, lawmakers in 2019 passed a bill requiring signatures from 10% of registered voters in 32 out of Idaho's 35 legislative districts and reducing the window for gathering signatures from 18 to 6 months. The Idaho Supreme Court threw that law out, saying the initiative process is a fundamental right under the state constitution. Reclaim Idaho's initiative to open primaries got on the ballot last year but failed, with 68% voting against after widespread disinformation campaigns against it. Representative Skog, speaking to the Idaho House State Affairs Committee this morning, claimed the initiative process in Idaho is broken.
The initiative process is broken. This is one way to level the playing field a little bit by raising it to 60%. There are other states that have 60% or two-thirds in some of their initiative processes.
Democratic Representative Todd Achilles of Boise noted the Idaho Supreme Court's previous ruling on initiatives at the State Affairs Committee meeting, indicating he is likely to oppose the bill once it comes up for a committee hearing.
We are pushing forward, you know, and it changed the initiative process when the Idaho Supreme Court has ruled unambiguously that the initiative process is a fundamental right for Idaho voters. So I think we need to address that, number one. Number two, we're putting a 60% threshold on Idaho citizens, when we as legislators only have a 50% threshold. So I think we have to justify that more clearly. And third is, I was asked the sponsors to address the implications of this change to the initiative process, because had we had a 60% threshold on past initiatives, we would not have passed sales tax relief, property tax relief, the homeowner's exemption, and a couple of others. So I think it's important that we look at the totality of this.
That was Democratic Representative Todd Achilles of Boise. The committee voted unanimously to print Representative Skog's bill, meaning the committee will likely hold a hearing on it soon. Republican State Superintendent of Public Instruction Debbie Critchfield says she believes Governor Little will insist on regulating how parents spend the $50 million he is proposing for private schooling. Critchfield says she also agreed with Little when he said during his State of the State address Monday there would need to be transparency for any private school funding program lawmakers approve. The state superintendent told the Idaho Education News yesterday, "I didn't hear anything yesterday that tells me he's changed his mind around accountability or transparency, and I've had the same stance." The governor made a statement that I've repeatedly made, that any support towards paying for choice cannot come at the expense of public schools. During his State of the State address Monday, Governor Brad Little said any private school choice law that comes across his desk would need to be fair, responsible, transparent, and accountable, and prioritize the families that need it most. He also said any such program cannot take funds away from private schools. The Idaho Education News reported Governor Little told reporters after his speech, support for private school choice had reached a critical mass, so if something was going to happen on that front, he wanted to have a say. He said, there isn't critical mass of agreement on any one thing, and that's been the issue the last couple of years. I want some things in it. I can't get them if I'm not part of the discussion. A Washington Court of Appeals commissioner issued a stay yesterday in the prosecution of Dr. Richard Eggleston of Clarkston while his case goes before the Federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Eggleston is a retired ophthalmologist or a surgical specialist in the diagnosis and treatment of eye disorders. The Washington State Medical Commission is prosecuting Eggleston for spreading COVID-19 misinformation. Dr. Eggleston's attorney, Todd Richardson of Clarkston, is one of the lawyers representing him. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., one of the country's highest-profile anti-vaxxers, has been co-counsel on the case. Kennedy is expected to withdraw if the Senate confirms him as Health and Human Services Secretary in President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet. Eggleston and his co-plaintiffs argue Washington's policy banning doctors from spreading COVID-19 misinformation is a violation of free speech. They're asking the court to decide if Washington's free speech laws allow such sanctions. If the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upholds the stay, the case will return to Assotin County Superior Court, where Richardson says he expects the case to die. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Richardson said, the case is not over. This merely puts a pause on the prosecution while we proceed with briefing and arguing the appeal. Dr. Eggleston's brief to the Washington Court of Appeals is now due in 30 days. If Dr. Eggleston wins at the Court of Appeals, the stay could become permanent, though that is not necessarily ensured. It is perhaps more likely that the case would be remanded to Assotin County Superior Court with instruction for a hearing on whether a permanent injunction should be granted. Washington Fish and Wildlife Director Kelly Sussewind yesterday authorized the killing of up to two members of the Columbia Wolf Pack following six confirmed and six alleged attacks on cattle in the last 10 months. The pack lives in the foothills and northwest slopes of the Blue Mountains near Petite Creek in Columbia County in southeastern Washington. The authorization is extended to ranchers who find pack members on private land. The agency hopes the action will change the pack's behavior. The decision is a turnabout on the director's October decision barring similar action against the Columbia Wolf Pack. The pack allegedly has nearly doubled cattle casualties in the ensuing 2 months. Wolves in the western two-thirds of Washington are protected by both the state and federal Endangered Species Acts. Wolves in the eastern third of the state are protected only by the state's Endangered Species Act. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tie-dye-everything.com.
They may offer people a legitimate way to convert cash into cryptocurrency, but crypto ATMs are also popular with scammers. Washington had the highest rate of reported imposter scams in the country in 2023, according to the Federal Trade Commission. The Spokane City Council recently passed a resolution supporting more state regulations for the crypto ATMs, including limits on how much can be withdrawn daily. Detective Tim Schwering with the Spokane Police Department says his office is receiving two or three calls a day about crypto ATM scams.
$50,000 is very common in losses. You know, $100,000, $200,000 in losses, entire life savings wiped out from these types of scams.
Schwering says most of the scams center around fake romantic relationships or bogus investment opportunities. He adds most of the scammers are based in countries that don't have diplomatic relationships with U.S. law enforcement. And even if he can find the money in countries like China, Russia, or North Korea, he can't get it back. Schwering says investment scams can be especially hard to recognize because scammers will allow victims to withdraw some money after making it look like their investment has grown on a fake website. Once victims feel secure that they can withdraw their supposed earnings, the con escalates. The FBI estimates Americans were robbed of close to $6 billion in 2023 through crypto-related scams.
So when you're making that kind of money, you can put money into building websites that are They look like legitimate investment websites.
Schwering is working with the Washington State Department of Financial Institutions on legislation to limit the amount of money that someone can deposit into a crypto ATM to $1,000 a day. He says this won't solve the problem, but could help mitigate the potential losses. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
A Wyoming arts hub is surveying organizations across the state to see if a potential new AmeriCorps program could help fill gaps in arts and humanities programming. The AmeriCorps Rural Intermediary Program would provide extra support for Wyoming arts and humanities organizations, which are often rural and can employ just enough staff to operate. Allison Malushnik, executive director of the Nicolaysen Art Museum in Casper, says this could provide several benefits to the museum.
We could utilize AmeriCorps members to help with our art education, outreach. There is potential for capacity building at different arts organizations, volunteer programs. I mean, there are many different ways that AmeriCorps members could serve different organizations in the state.
Malushnik says the first step toward implementing the program is gauging interest. Wyoming arts organizations can take a survey on the topic through January 20th. They can contact the Nicolaysen Museum for more information. According to a University of Wyoming report, arts and culture added more than $540 million to the state's economy in 2022, but that varies widely by county. Teton County saw nearly $230 million in arts-based economic output, while 11 counties saw less than $5 million. Malushnik says rural arts organizations could especially use the support.
This would hopefully give those organizations that do not have the larger community a sense of support and also a means to build programming and volunteer capacity.
The program would be a state-facilitated arm of the National AmeriCorps Service Program, which offers resume building and scholarship money to members who serve. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Wyoming News Service.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced today it is opening a public comment period on a proposed rule to establish distinct grizzly bear population segments in parts of Idaho, Montana, Washington, and Wyoming where suitable habitat exists and where grizzly bears currently reside or are expected to establish as populations recover. The grizzly bear distinct population segments would retain threatened status under the Endangered Species Act. The proposed action would remove Endangered Species Act protections outside the newly proposed distinct population segments where grizzly bears do not occur and are not expected to inhabit in the future. The press release from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says the proposed action is a first step towards fulfilling a settlement agreement with the state of Idaho requiring an evaluation of the grizzly bear listing in the lower 48 states by January 2026. With today's announcement, the service also responds to petitions from the states of Montana and Wyoming to establish and delist distinct population segments for the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem and Greater Yellowstone ecosystem, respectively, and finds these petitioned actions not warranted. After a thorough review of the best scientific and commercial data available, the service found grizzly bear populations in those two ecosystems do not, on their own, represent valid distinct population segments. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. Patchy freezing fog tonight between 8 p.m. and 3 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, low 27. Mostly sunny tomorrow, high 36. Mostly cloudy Thursday night, low 29. And 80% chance of snow Friday. Snow mainly after 10 a.m., high 36. Southeast winds 5, becoming southwest in the afternoon, 5 to 10 rather, and new snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. 60% chance of precipitation Friday night. Snow likely before 10 p.m., mostly cloudy, low 29. West winds 15, gusts up to 25. Little or no snow accumulation expected, and 20% chance of snow after 10 a.m. on Saturday, partly sunny, high 36. Currently 29 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. We'll have a noise filter segment coming up. And at 6:30, Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Lockdown Mosh Pits on at 7:30. Music begins in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades at 8:30 with Arlene. And Sounds of the Future is on 10 to 11, another local show. Music, entertainment, and information throughout your evening here at KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its listeners and supporters, including the Palouse Folklore Society, celebrating traditional music and dance on the Palouse since 1982. The Palouse Folklore Society sponsors concerts, jam sessions, and a monthly contra dance. Find out more at palousefolk.org or on Facebook.